Hello and welcome to Who's Slamming Who. This is Donovan Morgan. I'm actually standing in for Michael Modest this week. And I talked to Michael Modest today, and we decided that maybe I'll do a show this week, and then next week we will get together and talk about the show. I'm not as exciting as Michael Modest. I do not do commercials about divorce, and I do not do commercials about ring rats, although I've had my share. We won't talk about that, though, today. A couple of things, you know, the people that listen to the show, I don't know really, you know, how many it is, but I know that that he is entertaining, and the people that I have talked to, like Bison Smith and, you know, Joe Tomaselli, those kind of guys, you know, they listen to the show, and kind of like when they listen to it, they're a little apprehensive to listen to it at first, and then they listen to it, and they call me, and they say, wow, you know, Mike's really, people listen to the show. He's got, you know, he keeps your attention. And so I promise not to keep your attention for the next 45 minutes, but I will promise you that I'll tell you a little bit about Mike Modest and some of the stuff that you don't know about him. You know, Mike and I have had a real love-hate relationship over the years, and the thing that I'm proud to say is that I have absolutely nothing to do with pro wrestling today. And really, when Mike in his last show said, oh, well, Donovan just really hates pro wrestling and he's really got a bitter taste in his mouth with it, I don't. I love watching AWA. I love watching old wrestling. I think that the wrestling today is shit. But, you know, some of my best friends I've met in this business, Stevie Richards is my best friend that is still in the business and still doing a lot of stuff. And, you know, the best thing I can say about Stevie is I've learned how to be more of a human being outside the business from him than anyone that I've ever known. He is a great role model to me outside the business because he's made a life for himself outside of wrestling and a very successful life, and he saved all his money. And it's really great to have a friend like that, because if you ever need any money, no, I'm kidding, but, you know, he is one of the guys that I really, really look up to. And he's a great friend and always comes and visits me, but funny enough, when he comes and visits me, we don't really talk about wrestling. We talk about our jobs and, you know, what the future holds. And I think that's one of the things with this job and with this business is that when we were little kids and we were 7, 8 years old and we were watching wrestling and we really wanted to be it, you know, once we attained that goal, it was almost like it was all over. Because no one ever dreams of being an insurance salesman when they're 7 years old. And so when you attain your goal and then it's over, you have two choices. And one of those choices is to move on and get off your fucking ass and find something else to do. And the other option is to sit around and wait for someone to call you or work shows for $50 a pop and let people humiliate you, you know, and tell you that, oh, well, you know, people just really don't want you anymore. And you know what? I got out before that happened. So that's kind of, you know, my mentality about the business is that I love pro wrestling. I always have. I loved it. And when I was a kid, like I was telling someone the other day, you know, when I was a kid, even Paul Orndorff was good enough to be the heavyweight champion of the world. And now, you know, you've got, you know, CM Punk is your heavyweight champion. And it's not like it's a bad thing. It's a good thing for him. He's making a lot of money. But I'm just glad that I had guys like Paul Orndorff and, you know, Don Morocco and those kind of guys when I was a kid, you know, guys that actually looked like they could kick someone's ass. And so that was, you know, that's a cool thing. But we, you know, I was in the business for almost 11 years, and Mike and I spent 5 of those years in NOAH, in Japan. And the thing with NOAH is that, you know, I really enjoyed the company. I think NOAA's probably the best place to work, you know, if you're a wrestler in the entire world. The best part about NOAA is you don't have to put up with a lot of politics stuff. I mean, you know, they give you your finishes, you go out there, you wrestle your show, you're done. And luckily enough for me, you know, and Mike, you know, we were on, I think the first year, we spent 28 weeks in Japan. So we spent, you know, over half the year in Japan, and then from there we just, you know, we kept a steady pace. And then at the, you know, fifth year, it was pretty much done. But Japanese are shrewd. You know, Japanese are funny because they are the kind of people that they won't just fire you. You know, like Johnny Ace will come up to you and tell you you're fired. That doesn't happen with the Japanese. The Japanese are poker players, so they will stack the deck against you. So if you are, you know, doing something wrong, or they catch you, or something got out that you went out last night and you got drunk and you were walking down the street stumbling around, well, guess what? It's going to get back to them, and they're going to come up to you the next day and say, "Were you last night? We heard that you were out drinking. We don't believe it, but is that true that you were out drinking? Well, fuck yeah, I was out drinking. I'm in your godforsaken country, you fucker, and I get diarrhea every day from eating your shit food." And I've got to be away from my wife for, you know, God knows how long. And every fucking girl that is in your goddamn country has a hairy pussy, hairier than anything I've ever fucking seen. So how the fuck am I not supposed to drink? That's what I want to know. I mean, and seriously, that is what it's like. I mean, how the fuck are you going to be there? I'm getting hot right now. Dude, I'm hot. I got a fever. Like, I'm talking about this stuff, and it really, it's irritating because to them, it was supposed to be an honor for us to be over there. And to me, it, you know, it was an honor. I mean, it was great to make that kind of money, because I'll tell you, I was making thousands of dollars a week to be over there, and I know what guys are making now over there. And it's not even close to what I was making. But that's because, you know, the state of the business. And people have figured out what other guys will work for. And, you know, it's that way. But I'll tell you, the Japanese were very smart because they're cool in a way, and they're, you know, very shrewd in another way. But they stack the deck against you. So, you know, they'll build up your bad instances that you have had against you, and then when you all sit down, they'll say, well, you know, that one night you were drunk that we saw you, and then that other night, you know, I don't know what you were doing, but, you know, all the guys, you know, the hotel complained, and then the other night, you know, the taxi driver actually called us and complained. I mean, they really want to get a whole bunch of shit against you, so when it's time for you to go, they've got a big stockpile. But I'll tell you, the good part is when it was time for me to go, I left. And I remember Mike and I having this conversation. What happened, the demise of that relationship was, you know, Mike and I were supposed to have 15 weeks a year. And this was the last year that we were there. Our contract was for 15 weeks. And we were there 13 weeks. And after 13 weeks, we got our schedule for the rest of the year, and guess what? We weren't on any tours. So we took the tour schedule to the office guy. I can't remember his name. I think his name is Screw or Rue or something like that. But anyways, he said, yeah, you know, well, that's it. It's 13 weeks. Take it or leave it. If you want your money for the other 2 weeks, we'll pay you for that. But if you don't want it, maybe you can come on some tours next year. And so, you know what I said? I said, give me the money for the other 2 weeks because I'm done. So they paid us, and that was it. And then, you know, that was Mike and I had come to the agreement, you know, for that. But, you know, the thing was, at that point, I had just gotten married. I was moving to Florida, and I had been there long enough where my colon pretty much was really ripped, just from all the shit food that was there, and it was pretty awful. So I'd had my fill of Japan, so it wasn't a hard decision. But I will say, you know, Misawa was really good to us while we were there. We didn't make a lot of money when we were there. I'll tell you, you know, it depends what your version of a lot is, but it's a whole hell of a lot more than people are making now there. I know that. So we got out of there, and then after that, you know, Mike and I had talked about, let's see if TNA is interested. And at the time, the whole immigration thing was a big deal. And so it was on the news every day. And so Mike and I had called Terry Taylor, and we had called Bill Behrens and said, hey, you know, Mike and I have this thing that we've done before in Lucha areas, but we've, you know, been called La Migra Border Patrol. And obviously, you know, WCW did it, and it was awful when they did it. But Mike and I thought that it was we could kind of put a spin on it that was different and be a little bit better with it. So anyways, we finally got a match set up with TNA through Bill Behrens, which it was cool that he set that up, you know, for us or whatever. But we went down there and we wrestled. There was two matches. And first of all, right when they tell you, you're going to do two matches, you're going to go out and you're going to wrestle Conan and, you know, SD Jones Jr. and some other jack-off, and you're going to job to them in like 2 minutes, and then we're going to give you your real tryout after that against Andy Douglas and some other guy. I guess they're in the Naturals or whatever. So anyways, we went out and we had a six-man tag with Conan and stuff, and then, you know, we ended up jobbing in that. Some job boy took the finish with that, but after that, we ended up wrestling Andy Douglas and his partner, and it was a decent match, but it was probably 6 or 7 minutes, and then all I remember is we were at the restaurant after the match. And Mike saw, what the hell is his name? The fat guy that, oh shit. I can't even remember these guys because I haven't talked to them in years, but I don't know. Scott D'Amore, that's it. So Scott D'Amore, the fat piece of shit. So we see him at the restaurant, and Mike said, so what'd you think? And this fat fucking idiot comes up to Mike and says, yeah, you know, it was all right, it was all right. And that is completely, right when I saw him do that, I really have him to thank for me wanting to get out of the business and go somewhere else and make more money than I've ever made in my life. And the reason for that is because when I saw this fat, chubby fuck saying, yeah, you know, it was okay. You know, we're actually asking this guy, like, his opinion. And when he says, like, it was all right, he goes, the one thing, though, you know, we just want to see you maybe wrestle in not those Border Patrol outfits. But, you know, I think if you did it, and anything other than that, it probably would have been really good. It's just the Border Patrol stuff, you know, it's just too gimmicky. And I said, oh, really? Well, you have a fucking fish as a gimmick in your company, and that's not too gimmicky? I mean, this is on the news every day, you idiot. You know, so basically they didn't really get that. And I love Shark Boy, and I'm glad that he has a job, you know, because – you know, he is a talent. He's a hell of a talent. But they should have room for all of those, you know, those gimmicks. So anyways, you know, after that, the best thing was after that night, I watched the match on YouTube a couple days later, and it was good. You know, it was fine. It wasn't anything that to write home about. But, you know, Andy Douglas and his partner, they're not there either anymore anyway. So what does that say about them? you know, I watched it at home, and then I called Terry, and Terry said, well, you know, just keep coming around. You just live an hour away, and if there's something that opens up, you know, then you'll be there. You'll be able to take advantage of it. And I stopped for a second, and I thought, you know, this would be great if it was 1866 and the Civil War, you know, I mean, was happening. But unfortunately, I'm not a nigger. So what I'm going to do is not come around all the time and hope that you'll use me. I'm actually going to go out, and I'm going to get a job, and I'm going to learn a trade. And this was the thing, you know, I didn't know any trade. I didn't know any job other than wrestling. This is all I had done for my, you know, pretty much, you know, 10 years, 11 years. So I remember calling Mike one night, and we had a discussion, and I said, hey, man, you know, I'm going to go out, and I'm going to, you know, at least test the waters in the mortgage business. And Rick Steiner had actually hooked me up with a job in the mortgage business. So I got a good job there, and then, as you all know, the mortgage business did really well for itself. So the only thing I can say is at the end of the mortgage crisis, I was probably making as much as I was in wrestling when I got out. So, you know, if that tells you something, but the grand finale of it all is that I got into insurance after mortgage, and I was taught this trade that is just a really, especially in Florida, where there's a lot of seniors, and your senior market is really in Florida. It's the number one senior market in America, and it was really great. I was just blessed to get this job, and just talking to other people like Stevie Richards, who, you know, got released and already had a job lined up about 2 weeks after he was released. This is unbelievable. I mean, for a guy that was wrestling for 10 years under contract with WWE and then gets released and has a job doing computer stuff 2 weeks later, unbelievable. Because that guy was so smart, he was actually, you know, planning his future ahead of time. And not everyone, you know, shit, even I wasn't like that. I had to do it, you know, I did it after the fact. So it took me, you know, a good 2 years to get, you know, to get to where I'm at now. But I think, you know, all in all, I know I'm boring everyone probably right now as we speak, but it's a Friday night and my wife has gone to New York. So I'm just sitting at home not doing anything. But, you know, one thing I will say, you know, Mike Modest, you know, getting back to the guy whose show I'm doing now, Mike Modest is one of those guys I grew up in the wrestling business with. I'll tell you one thing, like love-hate relationship, man. That guy told me a lot of stuff that pissed me off throughout the years. When we started Pro Wrestling Iron, you know, we started Pro Wrestling Iron with the mindset that Mike Modest was going to really be a huge part of that. And he was a part of it. But the thing was, is Mike's, you know, love and stuff for his family. Mike had, you know, he was married and he has, you know, two kids. And the thing is, he always wanted to be with his wife. Unfortunately, his wife really fucked that up. So, you know, you got two kids, it's kind of hard to go back and redo everything, but, you know, Mike's wife really, I've known her, you know, ever since I've known him, and I never liked her, ever. I never once liked her. I mean, I thought she was a cunt, you know, pretty much from, you know, one of the first days I met her. You know, but the thing was, Mike didn't think she was a cunt. And Mike wanted to make it right. Mike wanted to do what, you know, he never fucked around on her. He never did anything. I mean, you think I'm saying this just to say it and put him over and stuff, but Mike never fucked around on his wife. And that was one of the things, like, you know, Bison and I would always talk about, and we're like, geez, dude, I mean, I know that it's hard to be in a country where every girl has, like, an Afro pussy, but, you know, sometimes, you know, when you're here 3 or 4 weeks, you get a little horny. You know, Mike's never even, you know, tasted the other side. So, I don't know. I think with Mike, it's one of those things. Mike definitely deserves someone that's going to admire the fact that he's loyal to them, because Mike was loyal to his wife. You know, not a lot of us can say the same thing, but I don't know. It's just, if you talk about Mike Modest and, you know, going to WCW, and that was the very first thing that happened in our relationship as friends where, you know, I was really happy. I mean, I'll never forget talking to Mike Modest the night that he had his first match in WCW, and we were like, dude, you did it, man. You did it, and we were really happy about it. I mean, I don't know, a dream come true, but, you know, it was a good thing for everyone at the time. And if anyone deserved it more than, you know, more than anyone we were with, it was him. And Mike and I, we just had a really good relationship. And when we were in the ring and wrestling, it was like, you know, we really, you know, had each other's backs. We really did a good job of taking care of each other. I'll never forget one time I was wrestling a match in the Budokan with Mike, and we were against Ikeda and Segura. And Ikeda, I was getting up, and I was on all fours, and Ikeda kicked me right in the elbow. And the best part was I lifted my arm right off the mat, and right when he kicked my elbow, it didn't even hurt. I mean, I just, because I wasn't leaning on that arm, it didn't hurt. So if I would have been leaning on that arm, it would have been brutal. I mean, it would have been I would have broke my arm. But when we got in the back, Mike grabbed him and threw him up against the wall and said, "You motherfucker, you do that to my partner. You motherfucker, you tried to hurt him. You motherfucker." And he was just screaming. And I was like, the best part was is he really did try to hurt me, but he didn't. And, you know, we just had each other's backs like that. It was good. I mean, you know, even though we never always agreed with each other on stuff, you know, 100% of the time, because no one does, but, you know, he really did have my back. And, you know, that's something, you know, nowadays, shit, wrestling's a very self-serving business. No one has each other's backs. I mean, you know, people are only concerned about themselves, and, you know, that's the thing that one of the things that made me kind of want to get out of wrestling was because, if I'm going to be concerned only about myself, then I better make a whole fuck of a lot more money than I do wrestling and hurting my body. You know, so that's kind of what I did. But I had the luxury of just learning so much, you know, throughout the 11 years that I was in the business and having a great time. And just, you know, the Super 8 was a great thing. I met great people like Ace Darling at the Super 8 reunion that we had a couple years ago. You know, he's a super guy. We just, you know, laughed and stuff. And Chris Daniels, he's a guy, you know, he helped me out a lot in the beginning of my career. But, you know, now I don't have a career. And I think that's one of the most important things for someone that's in wrestling to look at is, hey, dude, you know, there's nothing to be scared of when you get out of this business because we just go back to being what we were at the beginning, which is a fan. And that's the best part. Now, when I come home and I turn on, you know, TiVo, I you know, get AWA on. And I can watch some pretty damn good matches and be a fan again. And I like that. Because, you know, to be honest with you, it really beats sitting on a toilet, shitting my fucking brains out because I ate some bad ramen. You know, so It's cool. You know, I mean, I'm glad to be a fan again. And although I will say I never watched WWE, but it's not because, like, you know, I mean, I don't watch TNA either. So every once in a while when I turn the channels through and I see, like, Mike Tenay and that one guy from Home Shopping Network doing the commentary, it's great because I almost want to ask Mike Tenay, you know, what the fuck is wrong with you? Because every time, like, you know, a cat could shit in the middle of the ring and you would pop for it. And I think it really cheapens TNA. And I think Mike Tenay cheapens TNA. I think he's a piece of shit. And I think, you know, I think that they need, if they redid that, you know, their broadcasting, or their announce booth, and they, you know, redid some of that stuff, they might be in a better place. But, you know, Mike Tenay's just a mark, and that's what he's always been. But, you know, hey, thank God he's made a lot of money. But, anyways, that's pretty much it as far as I go. I know I've talked an awful lot. One of the things, too, you know, just going off on the friends that I met in the business over the years, you know, Frank Murdoch is one of my closest friends. Anytime I ever need anything, you know, he's there. And I think that's one of the best things about wrestling and that wrestling gave me. You know, wrestling gave me some of my best friends, you know, all of my friends except for one. I only have one friend that's not in the business, you know. But wrestling's a very special thing. It's just you have to outthink it. Because if you don't outthink wrestling, the morons and the scum and the shit that surrounds it all, you can get swept up in very quickly. You know, you can end up thinking that it's the end all be all, and it's not. You know, there's a lot of other stuff out there. I mean, but other than that, that's about it. I am Donovan Morgan, and thank you for listening. Hopefully you'll hear me next week. I will talk to you soon. Thank you very much. Bye.